Welcome back to the Hockey House Pod, episode 147, presented by Selly Hockey Co. I'm your host, Mackenzie Murphy, as we bring you the latest news from around the ACHA and AAU college hockey. Before we begin this week's episode, we wanted to send our condolences to the University of Oregon hockey team and the Bradford family following the passing of 22-year-old junior goaltender Henry Hank Bradford. Hank's mother had posted that the cause of his death at this point is believed to be a cardiac event. A native of Arlington, Texas, Hank was best known for his mustache and last-second split saves. The team said in a statement on Sunday morning, Hank was an incredibly kind and thoughtful man with a contagious laugh and an amazing sense of humor. As great a goalie as he was, Hank was an even better human. He was the perfect example of treating people how you want to be treated, never missing an opportunity to call someone sir or ma'am. Our thoughts and prayers are with Hank's family and the Oregon Ducks hockey community. The Ducks are gearing up for their second season in ACHA M1, and this news comes less than 2 years removed from the tragic passing of Ducks forward Dayton Clark, who passed away in May of 2023. So once again, wanted to start off the show and let the Bradford family and the Oregon Ducks community know that we're thinking of them. It was another exciting weekend of ACHA and AAU college hockey, and that's not the start everyone's looking for, but I think the whole club hockey community could come together for the guys at Oregon right now, because I can't even imagine what they're going through right now, and letting them know that we're keeping them in our thoughts right now. But the hockey was great this weekend. It was unbelievable. We had some big primetime matchups. We're going to recap the things that happened last weekend. We're going to recap the things that happened 2 weekends ago as we get into the groove of going every other episode for the start of this season. But Collins, we'll throw it over to you first. Big job posting here. We're ready to go. I know the people tuning in recently have been maybe wondering every episode when we're going to get an update from Collins, but I think we finally got one.
Yeah, I just accepted a position at OMD as a budget project management associate. So yeah, making the move to New York soon. I'm going to get my start in the media/advertising world. I got my roommate lined up going up next week to go tour a bunch of apartments and try and land a place, as you know, I try to get an early October move in, which is going to be really, really cutting it close. Hopefully we find a good place in a nice area at a decent price in New York. That's nearly impossible. Hopefully there's the right apartment out there. Complete tangent. I got to witness FCS versus FBS football. We went down to Maryland this past weekend to go see Villanova take on my brother's alma mater, the University of Maryland. So it was parents' weekend. Got to go visit him, check out some of the bars down there, RJ Bentley's, Cornerstone, a couple others. Great time. A lot of fun. Got to see some people I knew from high school, and also some of my old teammates from the hockey team at Villanova, which was funny. Just ran into them out of nowhere. But for an FCS program, Villanova looks great. It wasn't the result they wanted, but you know, FCS is purely for the love of the game. FBS is about money. Just going to put it out there. FCS is real football. FBS is semi-pro.
I'm sure the people at Delaware will have something to say about that in the near future as they make the transition. One of the schools that we seem to be talking about a lot when it comes to ACHA hockey and AAU college hockey. But it's always great when you get to get out and root for the alma mater. I did so on Friday night with Syracuse in the primetime spot. It was the 44th birthday of the Dome, and so they had the primetime slot for some classic ACC action against Stanford, lost on a last second field goal, just a heartbreaker. But again, it was good to get out and watch the game with some members of the club baseball team who I was pretty close with during my time at Syracuse. So it was good to do that. And another update, Fitzy's out this week. No Fitzy. He's actually catching the International League Championship game right now. As we speak, the Omaha Storm Chasers are trailing the Columbus Clippers 1-0 right now. So we're hoping that turns around and the Storm Chasers can force a game three so that Fitzy can continue to watch his older brother Ryan play some playoff ball right now. So we'll throw it over next to our executive producer, David Herman, who is in the building tonight. Herm, how's it going?
It's going great, Murph. I had the privilege of being back at Madison Square Garden for the first time in a long time to witness one of the craziest third periods, I think, in NHL history, basically. A 6-goal third period for the New York Rangers to cap off what was a very milquetoast game through two periods, and then an absolute offensive explosion. It went from a very sleepy garden to a very raucous one. I'm glad that I was able to spend that with my dad.
Herm, I gotta ask what the vibe is like for Rangers preseason games, because I feel like the garden is just one of those places where it's like, if you're a hockey fan, you gotta go see your team play there because it's such an electric environment. Is it a little different in the preseason when maybe not everyone's favorite guys are in the lineup and, you know, you probably get a little bit different of an atmosphere there?
They did a pretty good job of icing most of the stars. You had Zibanejad on the ice. You had Shesterkin splitting with Quick. You had an NHL tandem the whole time. Truba was on the ice. Fox was on the ice. It was a pretty proper NHL lineup outside of a couple of guys from Hartford. So it wasn't like you were seeing a complete minor league lineup. There was plenty to cheer for when it came to having your favorite guys. It definitely was a little bit quieter than a regular game for sure, but the Garden got crazy when they completed the full comeback late.
Yeah, I mean I gotta imagine. I know we talked about like the price of hockey gear, and you could say the same thing about NHL ticket prices. I imagine there's a lot of people who, hey, maybe that's like the only game they can go to all year, and so I bet those people were psyched in the third period.
Oh my god, me included. I was looking all day on the ticket market, and I happen to see someone on Twitter looking to move a pair of seats. Direct messaged her and was like, hey, would you be willing to accept one? She was like, sure, name your price. And I said, $25.73, because she was wearing a Matt Rempe jersey in her profile and I knew she would take it. And she thought that was hilarious. And I got to go for $25. And that'll be the cheapest ticket I get at the Garden all year.
There we go. I did some adulting leading up to the weekend. I was supposed to go on vacation, but as many of the College Hockey South teams know, there's a lot of games being postponed because of a hurricane that is about to sweep the Gulf Coast and make its way up north. So I had to do some adulting, had to get on the phone with JetBlue, had to postpone some flights, had to postpone some hotel rooms. We're going to call an audible, going to head up to Maine for the weekend instead. So I had to do that. I have some exciting news, though. I'm on a new men's league team. We're skating twice a week now. Just treated myself to a brand new pair of Bauer M50s. So we're ready to go for the season. Joined up with some former Cuse guys on a new men's league team in Boston. We're called the Crates. I was on the bench the other night and I was like, so what's the story? Like, why are we called the Crates? Like, our mascot is like in the Kachina style, but it is, instead of a coyote holding the stick, it's just like a box. And I was like, well, what's the story with the Crates? It turns out there's some ACHA ties to the name. And so we have a handful of Northeastern guys on the team, and the term Crates comes from the storage crate that the guys keep their gear in at Matthews Arena. And it just probably the worst smell in all of hockey. I've seen photos of this thing. So it brought a smile to my face when I found out, willingly signed up for it. A men's league team that had some ACHA ties. So I thought that was great for the brand. And like I said, I'm pumped up for the new skates. Warm last night, but unfortunately it did not bring us any good luck in a 6-1 loss. But again, I mentioned a crazy weekend in the ACHA. We're switching to more of a laid back, going every other week style with the pod for the foreseeable future. So we're going to hit the highlights from the last 2 weeks. We're not going to get into the every single final score of any game. Certainly, if something happens over the weekend, you want to make sure it gets included in the pod, shoot us a DM. More than happy to include something. But we'll get to the headlines to start. A big one here. Everybody was tuned in on Friday night. Florida Gulf Coast rocks the ACHA world with a win over Liberty's M1 team. In their first game of the season, FGCU hung in there with Liberty M1 and then pulled away in the third period to play spoiler in a 4-3 victory over the number 5 ranked Division 1 Flame. So FGCU, a team that made the Final Four last year in M2, going toe-to-toe with a top 5 team in ACHA M1 and giving them an L. Shout out to Keegan Wise of FGCU, a very early save of the year candidate, shades of 09, Marc-Andre Fleury with the dive across the crease. That kept it a 4-2 game. Liberty added one more to make it 4-3, but Florida Gulf Coast had the insurance to hold on. And then in a wild turn of events, Florida Gulf Coast gets swept by the M2 team. They dropped a 4-2 game on Saturday and a 6-5 game on Sunday. I mean, three games in 40 hours will do that to you. Saturday's game was a 1 o'clock puck drop. Sunday's game was a 10 a.m. puck drop. Kind of tough to come back down to reality after such a great performance on Friday night for Gulf Coast, but shame we don't get to see that win affect their standings in the rankings, right? The ACHA rankings don't factor in games that cross divisions. So Florida Gulf Coast will start the year 0-2. And honestly, an even bigger shame than that is Florida Gulf Coast University not letting the fellas wear the school logo. I was talking to Herm the other day, and we were getting fired up just talking about it. And Herm, you had a good point. Like, there's two things we think of Florida Gulf Coast. It's the
March Madness team and the ACHA team that wins national championships. And it's just a bummer that, you know, they took to the ice the other night in a game that made national headlines and they're wearing jerseys without the official school logo on it.
I'm going to say it's a little bit of a shame that the FGCU Instagram averages around 750 likes a post and then wouldn't take the collab on ours, which 5X'd that average. Real shame to turn down free media publicity.
Friday night, I was going off on Twitter because I was just furious at FGCU. And they responded to our Instagram posts and commented on it, but no replies on Twitter. So, I mean, we'll see where that goes. What's next for these two teams? An early wake-up call for Liberty. It seems like they're due for one of these every year where you see a team that goes into Lehigh and steals one. I remember, you know, a couple years ago, we had Robert Morris, who was at the bottom of the rankings. They came in and won one. A big test this weekend as number 10 Pitt comes to town. Like I mentioned, feels like this happens once a year where we see Liberty drop one of these games. And it's actually funny that we have the Utah State guys on here later because they were talking about, like, when you're one of the teams that draws sellout crowds every night, like, it's everybody's Super Bowl. So you're treating it like it's every other home game, and the guys across the ice from you are treating it like it's game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, maybe that's the wake-up call Liberty needs really early on in the season to kind of get things on the right path here. But again, a big test against number 10 Pitt. They make the trip to Lehigh after a weekend split at number 17 Oswego State. So a good battle between two future ACCHL teams, Oswego getting one win and Pitt getting another. But FGCU has the weekend off. We're hoping the boys stay safe as that hurricane rolls through, but they'll be back at home against East Texas Baptist the following weekend. And then Liberty M2 is going to take the weekend off as well. They improved to 4-0 with the sweep over FGCU. They started with an opening weekend sweep against Delaware. And they will sit idle this weekend as well before traveling to Concordia, Wisconsin for a showcase where they'll play against Concordia, Wisconsin and St. Thomas. So, Collins, you got to tune into that game. You were kind of locked in for us. Like I said, I was watching the Syracuse-Stanford game, and you had a feeling all along that Florida Gulf Coast was really controlling this one.
Just the pace that they were playing at and some of the bounces, I would say they were going their way. I think there was some officiating moments that definitely helped fire the boys up, kept them going, and made them realize that this should be a much, you know, different game than it was, at least heading into the third. So yeah, in the dying minutes of the second period there, pretty much anybody's for the taking, and watching FGCU come out just firing in the third period the third goal to put them ahead, and then the following goal to put them up 4-2 was just electric. The hit and then the 2-on-1, great game. We kind of got spoiled, you know, getting to watch a game like that on ESPN Plus and just have a top-notch broadcast is really awesome.
Do you want to talk about getting spoiled? Anytime we get a chance to watch Shane Rombach play hockey on ESPN Plus, that is getting spoiled right there.
That is true. We love our boy Rombo. Shout out Shane.
Another game I got a chance to tune into this weekend that was a free YouTube live stream, a little bit different than an ESPN Plus, was at UCO. And I had this one circled, was talking to Herm before the weekend about it. We weren't sure if it was maybe game of the week material or not. And, you know, decided to hold off on it because some weird things happened at UCO. We saw coaching change come in the offseason. We saw in May, longtime head coach Mike Rivera resigned. They filled his replacement in June with Tim Philbin coming in. 2 weeks ago, we saw a very thin UCO roster make the trip to Boulder for an opening weekend where they got swept by Colorado. Colorado was a fringe nationals team last year, and so UCO getting swept to them, you know, raised some red flags. And certainly you look at the bench, and they only have, you know, 13 guys out there. It's like, you know, is this the UCO team? Like, is this UCO team falling off? Like, what's going on here? And so they actually bounced back in the home opener with a 4-2 win over Drury. Like I mentioned, depth could certainly be an issue, though, as Drury stomped back on Saturday with a 6-2 win. Awesome seeing the Bronco Barn packed again. Love seeing the fans come out for the opener, but I'm hoping these guys can stay afloat because I attached a screenshot in the notes that we're all looking at right now, and this is the final buzzer. They're giving the salute to the fans, and there's 15 guys on the ice. Two of them are goalies. You know, we've seen it time and time again, you know, what happened with Robert Morris and they transitioned to Roosevelt and like the program's not really the same. And you see Illinois has a coaching change and they fall off and they're not going to nationals as consistently. We saw Iowa State shuts it down for a year and it's tough to bounce back. And so I'm hoping UCO can maybe keep this thing afloat for the semester. And then maybe you get some guys who leave juniors early and come a semester early and start in the spring. And they could add some guys because I think Drury is going to be a pretty good hockey team by the end of the season. And for UCO to beat them 4-2 with 13 guys. I mean, that is like, that is your men's league team showing up with six guys and beating a team that's rolling three lines. I mean, that is a heck of a performance by the Broncos, but I just hope they can, they have a couple more under their belt in this first semester, because their schedule only gets tougher with those teams out west.
I was kind of thinking about it earlier. It's like, yeah, UCO is going through this bit of a rough spot right now, but this is such a strong program. Even though they're rolling with 13 skaters right now, it will only be a matter of time before they have a full roster ready to go. I mean, there's a lot of appeal if you're coming out of juniors to go play at a school like UCO with the facilities they have and the support they have from the university and the pedigree as well, with in recent memory some deep runs in the national tournament. So won't be long before they're totally back.
Like I said, I think this Drury team is going to be pretty fun to watch. I've caught a couple of their games so far. They had an opening weekend sweep against Alabama in their first ACHA M1 action. You know, a team that didn't make a lot of noise in M2 last year, for them to make up the jump to M1 and sweep a team like Alabama. I know Alabama didn't have the strongest of years last season, but packed house on opening night. It was so cool to see. They had the cheerleaders behind the net right on the glass, student sections packed, the place is going nuts. And we got this awesome clip of the Drury takes the lead right at the end of the second period, and they include the Alabama player in the hug, and it just starts this kerfuffle. And honestly, I'm not one to throw hands. I think that would make me want to throw hands if I got disrespected like this poor Bama kid did in this goal celebration. But they blew out Bama in the Saturday matchup. Drury will have the weekend off. They'll have, I don't want to say a test against Midland, but they'll have a bye week, and then they go to Nebraska to play Midland, who is maybe a little more middle of the road ACHA team. So we can get kind of a pulse check on them in a couple weeks. I don't know if you saw this clip we posted, but since when has Orlando been a college hockey town? I mean, the packed barn to watch UCF play Miami. Andrew Cass comes up with a big save at the end of regulation, another big one in overtime, and then it's Rob Renner who buries the game winner for UCF. The bleachers are completely full. There's people standing around the glass, all there to see UCF battle it out with Miami. Miami, their first test in AAU D2, making the jump after winning the national championship in AAU D3. They end up getting the split the following day. This past weekend, we had Louisville travel down to Bama. They split in their first meeting as future ACCHL rivals. Another welcome to AAU Division I. This time it's Georgia and the Gators going head to head, and Georgia gets the sweep over Florida. But another game that we were able to tune in, again, it's coming from the Midwest, so I said not so Midwest college hockey here. An absolute battle 2 weekends ago between Maryville and Missouri State to open up the ACHA M1 season. Collins, we were saying, like, of all the places that we have on our radar to go and visit, like, opening night in Maryville looks electric. They got the blackout going. They call the student section the dog pound. Everyone's all riled up. Everyone's selling into the glass. The place is going bonkers.
The announcers were unreal. The crowd noise, the energy was incredible. Maryville is on my list.
Maryville came from behind on Friday night for the 6-5 win. And then it was Missouri State who came from behind in the third period. They erased a 2-goal deficit and got the win in overtime on Saturday. Really physical series. Love seeing that. Want to see these two teams meet down the road. And then we'll turn over a little more Jersey news here. We'll run through this really quickly here. But if you hadn't seen it already, Texas Tech unveiled the greatest third jersey in all of club hockey. Just a classic example of what teams in the ACHA can do with a little creativity. They broke the internet this past week by unveiling their tortilla-inspired third jersey. So if you're unfamiliar with Texas Tech, they have this tradition where a number of years ago, there was this whole debacle where they were throwing the lids of the soda souvenir cups at football games onto the field. And they had to stop giving sodas with lids to prevent people from throwing stuff on the field. So I guess people realized that you could sneak tortillas into the game and then throw those onto the field. And then at the same time as this, there's another story about an ESPN broadcaster who basically said Texas Tech is only known for college football and tortilla factories. So they've really embraced this tortilla tradition at Texas Tech. Everybody sneaks the tortillas into the game. And then I guess on the opening kickoff, everybody throws the tortillas on the field. What I love about this jersey is Texas Tech has gone with a classic college hockey jersey, the black shoulders, Texas flags on the shoulders, traditional striping. You got Texas arched above, Tech down below with the number in the middle. It's exactly what you would expect a Texas Tech hockey jersey to look like. But instead of it being white, it is the patterned texture of a tortilla. Herm, I want to get your thoughts on this because, you know, in your role, you guys are always looking for the craziest hockey content. I mean, this is a a layup for your team when they saw it.
This was a slam dunk and a half. I pitched this to my boss and he was like, yeah, no doubt. And Murph already had the package good to go. And it was the easiest check on a collab that I've ever had in my career at Open Ice, in my extensive 2-month career at Open Ice.
We'll see if the Texas Tech fan base has the passion to get this jersey to the finals for Jersey of the Year, because I think it's got the creativity, it's got the legs to go deep. But everybody knows when it comes down to Jersey of the Year, like, you're going against fan bases here. So we'll see how much pull the Texas Tech fans have when we get into it. But that's an auto bid for sure when we're talking about putting that bracket together. A couple other jerseys. Herm, I want to get your take, because as a jersey nerd, have you ever seen a monstrosity like we saw with this Kent State D3 jersey? I'm saying it looks like the double IHF USA template had a baby with Maction and they created this Kent State jersey.
And the Oregon Wings, you're forgetting about that part of it too.
They took the USA hockey template that nobody likes, they've recolored it to make it look like bird wings, and then they went with football numbers on the front. It's one of those things to me, I think it's so ugly that it's great. It's like, I've never seen a college hockey jersey like this. Then they went with the Oregon Wings on the shoulders, colored those brown too. At first I was DMing the team. I'm like, are these like supposed to look like a football jersey? Is that why you guys did the photo shoot on the football field? And they're like, no, like, we just wanted it to like have like eagle wings. And I'm like, all right. Like, I'm here for it. Like, give me something new. Every week we see something new in the ACHA and AAU college hockey. And this past week we had tortilla jerseys and we had Golden Flash wing jerseys. But Collins, I tossed it in there too, because we talk all the time about some of these big Power 5 schools that don't have varsity hockey. And certainly people always like to look at the Big 10 because there's so much success in Big 10 hockey at the Division 1 NCAA level. And also a bunch of teams at the ACHA level that I think people would love to see make the jump someday. I love these new Iowa jerseys. I think they are classic. And maybe it's just like the popularity of Caitlin Clark with the jerseys that just say Iowa on the front. But I love the look that the Hawkeyes are going, the cream jersey, classic Iowa across the front. And then I think the gold numbers kind of pop with the gold shoulders. I think it's a clean look.
It's definitely a stunner. I love the thin striping. I think thin striping is highly underrated. I mean, these are really, really nice jerseys. I think I'm getting sick of the cream. I think the cream is getting overdone. It's hard to tell with the lighting just how cream these are, but I feel like cream is becoming now very, and I mean very, hit or miss. You got to make sure that color is right. Otherwise, it ends up looking like flesh colored, like the Cox.
I hear your praise. I've always been kind of an anti-cream guy. I think they're pulling it off. I always thought cream just looked best for the outdoor games because it looks a little different. But sometimes, in like you said, Collins, in the lighting of a regular rink, sometimes it doesn't always look the greatest. But a couple more notable moments from the past couple weeks. We're turning over to our viral moments. We had a clip the other day between St. John Fisher and the University of Rochester in an AAU exhibition match, with St. John Fisher leading the University of Rochester 13-1 to start the third period. University of Rochester also a little shorthanded, playing with 9 guys. The captains agreed to start the third period. They were going to do rock, paper, scissors for possession. St. John Fisher continued to dominate, though, in a lengthy winner-take-all battle. They get the W. Crazy clip off of Live Barn of this all going down. It is no context club hockey at its finest. If you didn't know what was going on and you turned on, you know, opened up social media and saw that, you would probably assume it was like a summer league game. My favorite part about this is, though, the teams go for a full line change. They win the rock, paper, scissors battle and just call it a shift after that. So wanted to give an explanation for that, because I think a lot of people might have seen that clip and was like, what the heck is going on here?
At first, I didn't think that was a full line change. I just thought that 13 was the rock, paper, you know, like a Fogo in lacrosse. The rock, paper, scissors specialist won and then got off the ice.
Maybe that's what he was going for. I think everybody else on the ice was really confused when they saw him go to the bench and they were like, I guess we're going to change too. Nonetheless, it was made for a great clip. Again, it's for all the people saying like club hockey's a joke, like what is going on here? It's like, relax. It's a preseason game against two teams that don't play in the same division. One of them's shorthanded. All right, go touch grass. Speaking of touching grass, though, how about touching corn? NIU takes it to the cornfield for this photo shoot. And Herm, I want to get your opinion on this, because for me, again, it's not a jersey reveal, but I think it was a really creative way for NIU to kind of promote the season, right? Like, NIU isn't a team that we necessarily talk about like in Oregon, but all of a sudden, you know, they're wearing their regular jerseys in a fantastic photo shoot in the cornfield.
I was really impressed. Whenever these teams can tie in local environments, and it works for them. It was a really, really well done photo shoot.
Can we please just take a moment, though, to appreciate that transition from rock, paper, scissors to NIU? Like, that was all time. Hey. Like, hey. Please leave this in her. That was amazing.
I got nothing to transition us from the cornfield to Texas State, because we also had Texas State president Kelly Damphouse, who we talked about a couple weeks ago. He went viral because he was wearing a hockey jersey at like a pep rally to start off the year. He goes viral again, though. This time he's showing up to practice in full gear, born and raised in Northern Canada, in one of the territories, I believe. He last wore goalie pads in 1984. He went as far to go on the ice and get into a scrap. One of the Texas State goalies tossed on a Texas A&M jersey for the bit and just let Damphouse go to town at center ice. Love the comments saying like this kid didn't want to throw any punches, trying not to get sussied, but Damphouse seems like a huge beauty. This is a really cool thing to watch, and I bet FGCU wishes their president was coming out on the ice and getting into goalie scraps at practice. They'd probably wear the logo on the jersey by now. So really cool to see that happening. Some other fun moments. We had Braden Holtby doing a photo op with Navy head coach Kevin Rooney. We have two ACHA to the show moments this week, which we got to highlight here. I want to give stick taps to former University of Illinois defenseman Aslan Zhuzhebekov. That is a mouthful here. And I watched the broadcast to get the pronunciation right. Zhuzhebekov. He appeared in 11 games for the Fighting Illini last season before signing in the MHL. If you're unfamiliar, the MHL is basically the KHL equivalent of the American Hockey League. He signed with his hometown team in Kazakhstan for the 2024-25 season. After 8 games in the MHL this fall, he gets called up to the big club, HC Byers. He had notched 2 assists in 8 games. He gets the call up to the KHL 7 months removed from playing in the ACHA. Just an all-time skill jump right there. Go back and watch the clip of him doing his rookie lap. He's wearing his Illinois gloves. He's got the navy blue gloves with the orange CCM cuffs. And then I don't know if the equipment manager, maybe after warmups, like, hey, dude, like, you're not in the ACHA anymore. Take those gloves off. Because if you look at the photos from the game, he's wearing Bauer gloves too. So crazy hockey journey. We're going to have to get him on the pod at one point and kind of ask him how this whole process went down. Because a native of Kazakhstan, he suited up for Team Kazakhstan in the World Junior Championships. He played in the under-20 D1A tournament and the under-18 D1A tournament in 2022-23. So, you know, young enough to still play on the U18 team, but good enough to be needed on the U20 team as well. So he played in both of those tournaments. He recorded a goal and 2 assists in his 11 games at Illinois. So I watched the tape. I saw him the game he scored the goal against Alabama. Like, he moves the puck pretty well here. I would love to get a hold of some of those KHL highlights from his debut and see how he hung in there. Because I believe HC Byers got the win in that game too. So a crazy journey. Another crazy journey. We got to give stick taps to former Stony Brook captain in front of the show, Brendan Pepe. Or after being named SPHL Defenseman of the Year, Pepe signed with the expansion Bloomington Bison in the ECHL. The Bison are actually the ECHL affiliate of the Rangers. They're playing their home games at the former home of Illinois State, Grossinger Motors Arena. So oddly enough, Illinois State gets the boot from Grossinger Motors Arena to make room for this ECHL team. And now this ECHL team has a former ACHA guy on the roster. So in his second year with Roanoke in the SPHL, Pepe appeared in all 56 games and finished the season with 13 goals and 41 points. At Stony Brook, he was the ESCHL Player of the Year in 2022 when the Seawolves won the ECHL title. But Collins, I mean, we've been watching Peps for a while now. No surprise here that he gets a shot in the ECHL, but certainly an accomplishment worth noting. The fact that we got ACHA to KHL in the year 2024 is insane.
Yeah, this was not on anybody's bingo board. I think this would have been the last thing on the bingo board. And my mind immediately went to Russian gas, and I don't want to make a Russian gas joke. So yeah, I mean, huge props to Aslan, and we're pulling for the kid and can't wait to see hopefully some highlights.
I'm not ready to put anybody on the hammering a hot seat here to start the season. Do I have your permission? Can we warm up the seat? We got a couple teams. I think we could warm the seat up. Are you ready?
Go for it.
Hear me out here. Nobody on the hot seat yet, but a couple teams starting to feel the heat very early in the year, though. And I feel like I've already seen 2 huge highlight reel goals, and UNC has been on the receiving end. We saw that they got swept by South Carolina, and we saw the nasty toe drag by South Carolina in the second game. And then they split with UNCW. They have the overtime loss, but again, they're on the receiving end of another highlight that goes viral. I know they had the coaching change right before the season started, but UNC, it's a big brand. Guys get up for that game. And I think it's just too early on for us to be seeing anti-UNC highlights like that.
They're not going to take kindly to that. You know that, Murph.
I know. I mean, we need some more pro-UNC highlights. I need to see O'Shaughnessy do that little backhand dive reverse thing that he went viral for a couple years ago, ended up on SportsCenter. Like, they got a bounce back weekend ahead of them, though. They're traveling to take on Delaware and Rowan, so maybe get some wins in the win column here. They got off to a good start with an opening night win over Wake Forest, and I got to chip in here because we got to talk about our guys at Selly Hockey Co. We were actually just working with the Wake Forest boys on a custom hat design, was working some things out. You know, some schools, they like using the logo, they can't use the logo, they can use the name or they can't use the name, and we actually worked on a cool design, skyline of Winston-Salem for the Wake Forest boys, and they didn't end up going with it, but we had in the drafts Camel City Hockey Club, because Winston-Salem is the Camel City because of Camel cigarettes. Thought that was a unique take on it. They end up going with Wake Forest on the hat, which of course you love to see schools that can use the brand name there. But again, if your team is trying to do a team order now, we're getting into Christmas territory here. So make sure if the boys want some hats ready in time to wear this season, they get going pretty soon on those orders here. But that was a fun one that showed up at the office the other day. And now, again, not adding to the hot seat, but another team on our radar, Herm, is our guys at Saginaw Valley State. We mentioned Drury in their first games at the M1 level, a tough opponent for Saginaw Valley State. They had the home opener, the place is going nuts, they got new jerseys, game gets away from them in the third period, they end up losing 7-1, and then they followed up with a 9-0 loss the next day to Davenport. They have a home and home this weekend against Western Michigan. I think that's a chance to bounce back. Western Michigan, they got swept by JCU last weekend. So I think this one is within reach for Saginaw Valley. But Herm, I know we got plenty of friends over there in Saginaw, and you think a weekend like this is going to be good for them?
I think it's going to be an adjustment period for them at the M1 level. I don't think anyone was necessarily expecting a top 25 performance from the Cardinals, but I hope that they're able to keep it respectable within this first season as a building and growing opportunity, and then take season two in M1 to really, really get their footing in. I think we take for granted the success of a team like Purdue Northwest so quickly, the success of a team like UMary making that jump from a lower division up to M1. And not every team is going to see that success immediately. And that's not a knock on SVSU. I hope to see them succeed through the rest of the season. There's always going to be teams that are going to be middle of the pack, and it's up to them to differentiate themselves from that group.
Yeah, and I think too, we talked about it last episode. You don't want to overreact to these first games of the season as well, because you never know what training camp looked like for these teams. You know, maybe this Davenport team isn't as good as a 9-0 score, or hey, maybe this Davenport team at the end of the year is going to be one of the top 10 teams that we talk about, and you know, they got off to a hot start that we didn't see coming. So we'll see how things go. Like I said, a big bounce back weekend for Saginaw coming up against Western Michigan. With that, we get to go to our interview, a great interview with the guys from Utah State. Brendan Woolcott and Zach Pierce joined the show, give us an inside scoop on the upcoming season. They had a game against Weber State a couple weekends ago, and so we kind of recap that and what to expect from the Aggies this season. But without further ado, we'll turn it over to the boys from Utah State. We're pleased to be joined by two members of the Utah State Aggies hockey team, senior assistant captain and team president Brendan Woolcott and junior forward Zach Pierce. Boys, welcome to the Hockey House Pod.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
Right off the jump, is there a hockey house in Logan? Like, are you guys in familiar territory here? Is there a spot on campus?
We do have a hockey house. I think five of them that live there. So that's kind of the hangout spot after games sometimes, depending how that game goes, obviously. But yeah, that's usually the spot we go to.
I've got two teammates here at my house. It's a 4-bed house, but we kind of keep pride in keeping it nice. So we maybe only have one party a year. So that Smithfield house is definitely the go-to. It's been a little bit of a trap house for years now. So
that's what you, especially as an older guy on the team, like, you don't need to be living at the house. You can leave one house that gets a little crazy, but you want to come home to a place that's a little more put together.
Absolutely, dude. I'm getting old. I can't deal with that. I did all that my freshman and sophomore year. So
I got to ask, what's the one event that you guys host a year? Is it the same event that you host?
Yeah, we go Halloween party usually, but this year we're on the road for Halloween, so I don't know what we're doing.
That's tough. We always had the older guys loved doing the Christmas party, or if you were even doing like a Thanksgiving dinner, that was always a good spot for the older guys' house.
We call it the goat house, so that's the house we go to usually.
Love it. Now, you guys have already started, right? Like, was that a real game last weekend against Weber, or were you guys, is that like an exhibition?
That was a real game. So we already started, and then we got our second game this Saturday. So came in pretty quick. I feel like we were just doing training camp a couple weeks ago. So now we're in the thick of it.
Yeah. How long does that go for you guys? Because I know every team is different. Did you guys skate for a couple weeks? Was it 1 week and then boom, you know, you're traveling to Weber?
So our training camp started right when hockey started. We had, I think, 8 hours of ice over the span of 3 days. And then we rolled right into practice the following weekend. We had some baseline testing and different things we did that weekend. So I'd say it lasts about 2 weeks. But that first weekend where you're on the ice for 8 hours is definitely a grind.
I feel silly for asking if it was like a preseason game against Weber, because I did see the photos of the crowd and it was unbelievable, like it always is. You guys kind of maybe ruined the opening night party. What's that like playing there to start off the year?
It's a battle. I mean, it's a in-state rivalry. It's chaos. That's the best way to put it. Everyone's all amped up. There's really no structure to the game at all. It's just bodies flying all over the place. Since I've been here, that was the most fans I've ever seen in that rink. I actually played juniors in that rink. So when I played juniors there, it was always that packed. But since being on Utah State, they haven't filled it like that. And it was just an electric atmosphere. I mean, we were out there. I was out there for the first shift and I couldn't even yell at my teammates. It was that loud. Like, I couldn't even hear my own voice.
It's funny because I mentioned beforehand that we were going to talk about the pipeline of junior hockey players that go to Utah and then just stay in Utah. So, Piercy, I wanted to ask you, like, what is the difference? Like, you played there in juniors and now you get to go there on the road. Like, what are maybe some of your favorite parts about being on the home team there with the fans in Ogden, or maybe some of the fun parts about being on the road team now?
At first, it was weird to get used to, because obviously when I played for the Mustangs, I was on the other bench and that's all I knew was sitting on that side. So where Weber sits is where I was usually sitting. Now going there as the opposing team, it's honestly kind of fun because you get to shut the crowd up a little bit. I would say a lot of it, though, there's not as many Mustang fans that go. I feel like the Mustang fans and the Weber fans are kind of separated. The Mustangs have their like rookie gatherings every year at our home games. So like all of them are dressed up in their gear sitting up in the stands. So it's kind of cool because it brings everyone in together. But yeah, it's definitely a weird feeling walking into that building and being on the other side.
What was it about Utah that made you stay? Being in Utah, did you learn maybe about the ACHA teams in the area? Like, how did you find Utah State?
I found Utah State through our goalie, Titan Anderson. So I played juniors with him. My last year of junior was the COVID year. So I didn't play for, I don't know, it was a year and a half maybe, just because everything was up in the air. I was trying to get in contact with Titan because I was wanting to play in Utah still. And I was literally about to commit to Weber. Actually, I already verbally committed to Weber. They sent me the paperwork to sign all the information, give them all my like numbers and stuff. And Titan finally responded and was like, yeah, come out and visit. Like, we'll take you. And so I was like, all right, done. So I kind of ditched Weber. And ever since then, I feel like they kind of hate me, but that's what kind of makes it fun too. So, I mean, Utah's gorgeous though. The fans, the atmosphere, and up here at Utah State, we got a lot of good fans and a great community. So I really love it out here.
That's why we'll eventually start talking about the atmosphere you guys got going. But Wolves, I want to hear a little bit about your background. I mean, you grew up in Alaska. Talk about that and maybe what hockey was like for you at a young age.
Yeah, so Alaska born and raised. My dad was a coach growing up. He stopped coaching me when I was 10 because he didn't want us to hate each other, it was pretty nice. But I had a really good time growing up playing hockey. I had skates on me when I was 3 years old. We had a pond in our backyard that he'd go and flood every year. But instead of having fun and, you know, messing around as a kid, I was doing skating drills and, you know, all the fun coach stuff. So it was a really good time, though. I mean, I grew up playing there, played high school hockey there, played travel hockey. Obviously, never went and played juniors. My start of juniors would have been during COVID. Talked to a couple teams, but just kind of decided it'd probably be best to go start school. So did a little bit of searching. Actually, just DM'd a guy who I saw was on Utah State, got in contact with the coach. And he was like, well, you know, you never played juniors, so you're gonna have to walk on. So I said, I'll be there. So I just applied to the school, got in the business school, and ended up here. But no, it was a great time growing up playing high school in Alaska. I mean, over Christmas break, we'd spend 8-9 hours out on the outdoor rink. It was such a blast. But ended up here in Utah, just not really knowing what to think. But it's a beautiful place, beautiful campus. The school's awesome. And we've got a really tight-knit group here. So
growing up in Alaska, was your town anything like the movie Mystery Alaska? Like, any parallels there in the hockey community?
Oh, a little bit. I'd say all of Alaska is actually pretty underrated hockey-wise. People in the States don't really hear about it because we're so far removed. We had a couple trips down to the Yukon, actually. I got to watch Dylan Cousins play when I was a kid. He was gross. Pretty cool watching a kid play like that up in the Yukon. But no, it was hockey crazy. Our high school rink, like every local game was packed. You know, fans were just going crazy. I couldn't have asked for a better place to grow up and play hockey. I think we have a pretty decent Alaska pipeline here to Utah State, but it's definitely underrated.
When you're looking, you know, when you DM this kid about going to Utah State, like what was it that you had seen that was like, hey, like I want to play college hockey there?
I mean, obviously the fans. I saw a couple of fights on YouTube back in the day, you know, 08, packed house. And I saw their rivalry against BYU. And that was just a place I had to be. It looked like so much fun. And I did a little bit of research on the school. School looked great. But I mean, hockey was definitely a really big one. It's nuts here. It's crazy. It's a zoo when we play at home.
I mean, that's crazy. Like how much juice has been squeezed out of those fight videos on YouTube, right? Because I think if you search like Utah State versus Weber brawl, Utah State versus BYU, there's a brawl. Like the rink is packed. And it's like, again, that's how I found out about Utah State hockey, right? It's like this ACHA team in the middle of Utah is just getting 2,000 fans every night. What is going on here? So like, I'll throw it back over to you, Wolves, but like your first memory of stepping on the ice there in front of that crowd, what was that like?
It was unreal. We actually ended up playing in BYU for my first game. We couldn't swing it with the school to play at home with COVID. But we went down to Provo and played BYU and they packed house there. I think Peak's capacity is just over 1,000, but their whole wall was full. We had their student section yelling obscenities at us. It didn't really go along with honor code, but it was so much fun. And then I think my first memory playing at home was against BYU. I got a one-timer on the high circle and scored, and it was just nuts. It was right by our fans, went and jumped in the student section on the glass, and all my teammates followed me in. I mean, it was just crazy. Like, our fans are so much fun. We have to tell them to get off the glass almost every game so they don't break it while we're there, but it's just such a good time.
Now, Zach, like, what's the secret in the sauce? Like, why are folks in Logan just, like, so pumped to go to hockey games? Like, what is it? Is it because there might be a fight when Weber comes to town? Is it, like, what is it that brings everybody to the rink on Friday and Saturday night?
I mean, honestly, I feel like it's just because Logan's such a small town. If football and basketball aren't playing, like, we're the next team up. Even when they play, like, we still get a good amount of fans. I just feel like we bring a good atmosphere. We try to do as much as we can in the community. We try to give back as much as we can. So just, like, having that tight-knit group with like the fans, letting them know how much we care about them, just I feel like brings them every game. And yeah, I mean, you never know what you're going to see in our games, especially during Weber. A fight could break out in the first 2 minutes of the game or a brawl, and that's, I think that's just what the fans like too. And I mean, our fans get going. Like when we score, they chant, "Hey goalie, you suck," kind of like the Predators after every goal. It could be 10-0 and they're still doing it. It sucks for the other team, but at the same time, it's still super fun. So I just feel like we have the best fans in ACHA.
We moved on from talking about opening weekend at Weber, but I saw a video that they throw fish on the ice. What was going on there this past weekend?
Yeah, they chucked out 3 fish. I don't know what it was for, but I was actually on the face-off for that, and it came by and hit me in the skate. I looked down. I was like, what is that?
It like almost took out a Weber kid. Like he almost got, he got hit with like 2 fish.
Yeah, there was 3 of them. So I don't know what that was. They told the fans that if they do that again, it's going to be a penalty. But I mean, it was fun. It's part of the environment, I guess. That just shows you how rowdy that game was.
Well, so I go back to you. Like, again, you mentioned the rivalries. Like, you know, the BYU game is a reason that maybe you chose to go to Utah State so you could play in games like that. And then like, to hear that like they're going to shut down their whole hockey program, like, was that weird for you guys? Because it's like one of the teams that you guys like get pretty fired up to play against.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. One of the biggest things that they said when their team, when we eventually heard that they were going to be no longer, was just what an impact they had on the community there as well. I mean, BYU, like, you know them for their football. They've had great basketball. But I mean, the amount of pull that their team had in the community down there, it was great. I mean, I thought it was great for you, like just Utah hockey in general. It honestly hurt both programs, ours and theirs, more than anything. Just not being able to have that rivalry anymore was pretty sad. It really did just feel like it was out of the blue. We had scheduled games with them. Everything seemed to be going fine. And then we had a couple BYU players reach out about playing for us. And we were a little bit confused, and come to find out that they no longer had a team. It's really sad. As much as we say we hated those guys, I mean, that's a rivalry you want to keep around, right? You hate to see it in the Ochoa community.
Now, as someone who serves as the club president right now, like, do you see something like that? And does that kind of drive you to make sure like you have a really good relationship with Utah State so that, you know, something like that would never happen to you guys?
As much as We get frustrated with the school sometimes. They do give us a lot of support. We've got people in place to help us out a ton. They really let us be more or less independent as long as we stay within certain rules. But we get to take care of ourselves. They let us be a big part of the community here. And I think we're really invested in the community here in Cache Valley, like Zach said. It is smaller here, but we're just so tight-knit with people that have been around the team for years and years. Like, we have season ticket holders who have been here for over a decade. I don't think that's something the school wants to go away. We do volunteer opportunities with the junior Aggies out here. We visit elementary schools. Like, we're just so well connected. I just think it's a great relationship builder, not only between us and Utah State, but just Utah State and the community.
Did I see you guys got a new jersey set on the way for this season?
We got two new jerseys coming. So we already revealed the white ones. We're going to wear we're wearing the blue ones this weekend. So
is that a big deal? Because it's got the Utah State logo on the front? Because I know that hasn't always been on the jerseys.
We got in trouble my first year here. We had the Utah State on there. Wilcott can touch more on it in a sec. But now with the logo, and we have it nice and big and embroidered, it's pretty sweet.
Like any Otter team, we've had a crazy back and forth on what is and isn't allowed. The U State mark is actually considered a spirit mark. So we're allowed to use it if we have hockey club on a main part of the jersey. So I swung it as, well, we can do U, like the hockey club on the shoulder patches. And they said, okay, that's fine. So we have our block A and hockey club under it on our shoulder patches, so we can get away with U State on the front. Because a couple years ago, I was told if we were to use U State or Aggies, we had to have hockey club under it on the front of the jersey. And I was doing absolutely anything I could to get rid of that. So
it's all about getting creative, right? Like, I mean, you guys are hockey guys. Like, you don't want to go on the ice. Well, I mean, now in Utah, it's cool to go on the ice in a jersey that says hockey club, right?
Yeah, the NHL made it cool, though. It was pretty hard for us to swing it. But yeah, dude, and literally anything you can do to get creative and get past some guidelines, you got to do it.
I know you guys aren't in Salt Lake City, but like, that's got to be pretty cool, like seeing the Coyotes move to a place like Utah. Like, I know maybe the general public is looking at it like Utah, like they've never had an NHL team before, like, you know, had AHL, ECHL teams, but I mean, the ACHA has thrived for so long in Utah. You have to think that the NHL is going to be pretty successful in Utah.
Yeah, I would say it's going to do very well here. Just like with the ECHL team, they get a bunch of fans, and I actually have a couple buddies that play on the ECHL team out here. So like, I've talked to them and they say the fans get into it, and I think Utah deserves a hockey team. I mean, they only have had a basketball team, and then obviously they got like the college football and things like that, but to bring in an NHL team, and there's like, I feel like there's a new buzz in the city. Even though we're far away, like, you still see it on social media, like people out here are excited. You get all the kids out here who are excited for that. So just seeing the NHL come out to Utah, I feel like it's just going to help grow the game of hockey in Utah, just because, especially up here in Logan, like I feel like just having an NHL team is going to bring so many more kids to want to play hockey, and it's going to just help develop like the youth programs and you're going to probably start seeing more kids go to the NHL eventually from Utah.
Yeah, I mean, even like a team, you know, where Utah's coming from, like the Coyotes, the amount of, you know, now rinks that are in Arizona, all those kids that have grown up. I think it's interesting. My favorite fun fact about Utah is that like a lot of these rinks were built for the Olympics. And Zach, you know a thing or two about that in Ogden, right? Like, well, as you mentioned, Peaks, I believe, like all these Olympic size sheets in Utah because of the Salt Lake City Olympic Games.
It's almost every single rink here. Little known fact, Eccles, where we play, was also built for the Olympics. It was a practice rink for a couple of teams up here. So we have a couple Olympics banners sitting around up here too, but it's literally everywhere in Utah. Almost every rink was built for the Olympics back in 02.
It does make it kind of challenging, though, when we go play other teams out of state that play on NHL rinks, just because you're used to the time and space. It feels like you have all day with the puck. 2 years ago, we went to Botno, which was smaller than an NHL rink. And it felt like we were playing, I felt like I was playing mini sticks with 25 little kids in the rink. It was insane. Like, so we're just spoiled being able to have the big ice, and the rinks out here are all super nice. And I mean, they're gonna have the Olympics out here again, so I'm sure they'll start putting out more rinks, maybe, or at least, you know, renovating some of them.
Yeah, and now correct me if I'm wrong, like Botno, that's like somebody flooded their winter shed in the backyard and then like put boards inside of it, right? Like that, I mean, the ceiling's very low there, like the walls of the rink basically go like right off the boards.
It was crazy because the back of their net wasn't even glass, it was wood. I've never played in a rink like that. It was freezing cold. The hash marks were literally touching the boards. That's how small the rink was. There was no space on the outside of the hash marks. And it was just, I mean, it was a gong show to say the least. Like, people were running into each other. There was zero time and space.
Botno was like literally one of the craziest places I've ever played. There's like the town population's just over 1,000. There's absolutely nothing to do. The rink is maybe 10 degrees. You get out there and they're bumping EDM music and you literally can't hear your own thoughts. It's one of the coolest, but one of the craziest rinks to play in. Like those guys that play out in Botno and practice there, like tons of respect. Good for them.
Well, I got to ask, because I'm looking at your schedule, like for the most part, there's enough teams in your area where you guys don't have to do that much traveling during the year. Like, have you guys gone on any trips outside of Nationals to maybe some places outside of Utah that have been great places to play?
Last year, we went to St. Louis and played Lindenwood. This year, we actually go to Arizona next week. So we're going to go play all the Arizona teams. So we try to do our best to get out to other places other than Nationals. And like we have our Utah Cup, and then we have Mountain West. So like that switches off between like Montana and Utah, things like that. So it's kind of cool to go out there. It's nice team bonding. So I'm really looking forward to, going to Arizona next weekend.
Kind of the opposite of that. There's a lot of teams that I know, like their one trip is the trip to Utah, because you guys are a part of, is it the Beehive Showcase that where all the M2 teams go to Utah?
Yeah, we host that showcase every single year. It's four games for every team that shows up. I'm pretty sure they hold games down in Ogden as well. So it's a pretty big tournament. Tons of teams come here. I think it's great. You see guys from the East Coast, you see West Coast teams, see a lot of teams that probably would never see a matchup without it. So the Beehive Showcase is tons of fun. It's also tons of fun just seeing other teams and where they come from and kind of how everything looks for them as well.
One thing that I feel like has slept on with us as well is we always get everybody's A game because everybody's so pumped to play in front of our fans. When teams come in for Beehive, like we played New Hampshire last year, we're going to get their best. Like if Weber comes in, we're getting their best. Montana State, we get their, like we get everybody's best because everyone, we're fortunate to have a rink where it's packed almost every night. And a lot of teams aren't fortunate to have that. So they're going to take every chance they can to, play in front of a crowd. And then, when they score, they're going to taunt the crowd because they're not used to having a crowd, or they can let it get to their heads. So that's something I feel like a lot of people don't really see, is the fact that when we play teams, like we're getting their absolute best because they don't want to lose in front of a fan base,
Oh, absolutely. That's what we call the Liberty effect. Like Liberty has by far the best facilities in the ACHA. So like when a Delaware makes a trip over there, or you're like Drexel or Pitt, and these teams that, don't have the opportunity to play in front of 2,000 fans and a Jumbotron and all the bells and whistles, like you're going to get a team's best because it's like, it's their Super Bowl. So I'd imagine it's very similar for you guys, but we got to talk about Eccles too, because I feel like we've danced around it for a little bit. We've talked about the fans and whatnot, but like, do you guys have a locker room there? What are the facilities like in terms of what you're working with every day?
Honestly, Eccles is unreal. Comparatively to even for away teams, we have some of the biggest away locker rooms I think I've ever seen in a rink. We have a pretty early practice slot, but we get it every single year. They give us prime time for our games. We get priority for pretty much everything. And we have a pretty sick locker room. We need to go in and we need to actually make a video of what it's like, but every single guy has a stall. Last year, we actually got donated a big U-State light that sits on top of our ceiling. We got lights that go up around our stalls. It's such an unreal atmosphere to be in. Like, I would argue that we probably have better locker room, or like a better locker room than most NCAA D3 teams. It's pretty sick. One of the best in the ACHA.
The other thing too that we're doing this year that's brand new is we got a new head coach, and he's been awesome and is really wanting us players to just focus on hockey. So we've actually hired equipment managers. So we get our laundry done every day now, or every other day. We get, he just wants us to focus on the games and kind of have us treated like NHL guys, which is cool for us because it lasts, the last couple of years we, have to do all those little things by ourselves and worry about this, worry about that. So now it's just focused on hockey and, being able to play in front of a crowd, it all kind of ties in together because it kind of makes you feel like the man a little bit, especially when you're out like after games and stuff. People are waiting in the lobby. Like the lobby's swamped with people just wanting to say hello. And, you got kids asking for autographs, asking for sticks and pucks and things like that. So it's a really special place to play. And I feel like, I wish a lot more people could experience it. I feel like slowly things are starting to get pointed our direction and people starting to hear about Utah State, but I feel like we're still a sneaky, unpopular school that I feel like should be popular, but I feel like that's going to come in the next couple seasons.
I got to ask, it's got to be pretty fun, you guys being vets and seeing new guys come in. I'm looking at like the commitment graphics. Looks like we got, a NAL kid, some NA3 kids, an NCAA transfer. Like, is it cool seeing like these guys come into the locker room and be like wide-eyed about the ACHA? I don't think any kid dreams of growing up and playing in the ACHA. Now to go to a place where, like you said, Zach, like it's a sneaky good place to play. Like, is it cool seeing their reactions? Like, wow, we have like a locker room with a light. Like, wow, we equipment manager, like all this stuff. Like, you guys haven't even played a game yet in front of your fans, and I'm sure these guys are pumped up.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool to see. And I think it's an adjustment period at first, obviously. Like, you're a freshman now. You're not like the vet at juniors. You're trying to figure out how to navigate school hockey and, you know, meet new people and things like that. So having a good like culture in the locker room is huge. And just seeing these guys and how much they enjoy it. Like, we took a lot of stupid penalties against Weber on Friday, but a lot of it was just everyone was so jacked up and the emotions were flying high. So I know everyone's pretty anxious to play the first home game, and it kind of sucks we've had to wait. We're going to have to wait a month from the season start. So like, we still have 2 more weeks and then we have our first home game, but it's a Thursday night game. There's no other sports going on that I know of. So it should be a packed house, and we might even have to turn people away from coming into the rink because we can only hold so many.
You're teasing people at this point. People are seeing you're playing games and they're going to have to wait a little bit longer to catch you in action.
We also get like at the Weber games, I would say probably like 40% of the rink is probably some of like our fans. Like half of the rink from where we sit on the bench to the right, a lot of it is a Utah State fans. And like when we scored, when we put up 4 against them, they were still doing the "Hey goalie, you suck" chant in their barn, and like everybody can hear it. Like, it's so loud with our fans there. So our fans are really good with traveling. Like, a lot of them will come down to the U this weekend too. So that's what I mean. Like, everyone loves Utah State hockey out here, and it's something special.
I feel like when I watch these games out west, like they just seem like very physical. Like, I don't know if it's like that West Coast junior hockey style where like the games are big and they're physical, which I think is ironic. Like, you guys are playing on Olympic sheets. So like, is there a certain style of hockey that ACHA M2 West plays?
I'd say it's definitely physical. You see big open ice hits. You see guys getting after it in the corners. You see after the whistle, guys just yapping at each other. You see a couple punches thrown. For me, coming from high school, it was definitely a crazy wake-up call playing BYU and Weber. You know, I have these 23, 24-year-old guys trying to take my head off. I'm just some little 18-year-old. It's just crazy hockey out here. Another sneaky thing, like, you see the big hits, you see fights, but it's sneaky good hockey. We have some really good players. We have really good competition out here. Montana State is always really, really good. There's just like so much competition. I think a lot of it just boils over and you see a lot of big hits and stuff, but the skill level out here is just unreal as well.
Well, Wolves, I got to ask, because it can be an adjustment when you guys come to the East Coast and now you're playing on these NHL style rinks. You've had the opportunity to go to Nationals twice, I believe, right? You went to St. Louis and you also went to Boston. Is that correct?
So we went to St. Louis to play Lindenwood, but it wasn't for Nationals. I did go to Nationals in Boston though.
So like, what is that adjustment leading up to Nationals though? Because like, you're going to a place, you're going to play teams that you've never played before on an NHL sheet, which you maybe like less than 50% of your games are on. Like, what is that prep like for Nationals? Because I know you guys came to Boston and you played your games, and it probably wasn't the experience you guys maybe thought you had going into it. But like, what is that adjustment period like prepping for Nationals?
I would say it's tons of small area games. We do a lot of drills where you kind of shrink the ice. You know, we'll bring the ice down to maybe the tops of the circles. Obviously, it's the same length net to net, but you know, just having guys have to deal with less time and space. I think a lot of times too, we just kind of try to draw tactics from when we're going to play in Colorado or Montana or Arizona, when we're playing in those smaller rinks and playing those, you know, faster paced teams. Cause here on Olympic sheets, you see a lot of stretch passing, you see a lot of flying the zone. But we feel like when we go to Arizona, you know, guys are just, they're dumping chasing, you know, everything's between the blue lines. A lot of video as well. The nice thing about Nationals is a lot of those teams have video out there that you can watch. So a lot of guys watch video and just kind of try to prepare to play on a small rink and, you know, play hard, always move your feet. I think that's about it. Our new coach is here, Jeff Volkman. He comes from UNC and he's big on just moving your feet and getting after it. So I think we're going to have no problem when it comes to playing on NHL ice this year.
Zach, I want to ask about Coach Volkman because he did some huge things at UNC in his time there. And I think it's cool. At least for me, you know, we've been covering the ACHA for a couple of years now. It's cool seeing familiar faces in different places. Like, what does he bring to the table? I know Wolves mentioned like his big thing is taking stuff off the plate of hockey players so that you guys can just go to the rink and worry about the game. Like, what are some things you've noticed early on in his time in Logan?
I would say the biggest thing is he's shown us right off the start that he cares about every one of us. Yeah, he's our coach, but at the same time too, he's almost like a friend to all of us. If we ever need anything, like, we could talk to him about whatever we want, whether it's school, personal stuff. He's like almost like a dad to all of us, I would say. So like, he's just been very, very approachable. Last year, we had a problem with the coach that we hired where it wasn't like that. So having him, it's been a nice breath of fresh air. He really wants us to work hard. He's very, very, I wouldn't say lenient, but he understands mistakes are going to happen. And he's always open to feedback. If a guy's not playing, he's willing to talk. He's willing to tell you why. He's going to tell you what you need to do to get better, what you need to do to be in the lineup. If, you know, if you're struggling, wanting help with doing this or that, he'll show up to the rink. I mean, because we can get to the rink whenever we want. He's got the keys. So I mean, if you really wanted to, he'd probably be there at 4 a.m. if you wanted to work on extra stuff. So he's been great, and I'm really excited. And yeah, like I touched on earlier, he's trying to do everything he can to make it not as stressful for us and just building a good culture in our locker room. And so far, it's been great.
I was the club president for some time when I was at Cuse, and we had to hire a new coach. And that's not a fun thing to do when you're like a student athlete on the team. Like, how involved were you in like having to, you know, replace a coach and then maybe hire Coach Volkman?
Man, it's been crazy. I think that's a really big thing that we try to keep away from players here at Utah State. Like, everyone knows I'm president, but I try to keep what I do kind of on my own terms. It's best if not all 27 guys are worrying about what's going on presidency-wise. But yeah, the coach turnover here has just been crazy. My freshman year, the team had actually just gone a different direction with a coach. We had a coach here who coached for like 14 years, and the guys just decided it was time for a change. We had a new coach my freshman year who ended up quitting in the middle of the summer my sophomore year. And so we actually had to hire a coach who was volunteering at the time. We had to just pretty much beg him to coach for the next 2 years. He did a great job, but from a club standpoint, it was super stressful. Like, we didn't know if we were going to have a coach. Last year, we had a little bit of an issue with a coach. We ended up having to let a coach go in the middle of the season, which was super rough. That was quite the fiasco. But we actually heard about Jeff through an assistant coach that we have who does a lot of our recruiting. And we talked to him, and he just loves club hockey. He loves college guys. He loves taking care of us. He loves all around. You can just tell he's a good guy, you know? And I feel like those people are few and far between. There's obviously good people who want what's best for the program, but you can tell he's really just committed to not only making good hockey players, but making good people out of us, you know, making us good young men that are ready to go into the workforce or whatever it is that we do after hockey. It's such a weird dynamic dealing with travel and dealing with hiring and firing coaches and trying to keep your relationship with the team as a teammate, not as president. It's just, sometimes it's a mess, but I honestly wouldn't trade it for the world. I've learned a ton. I've got to know every guy here much closer than I ever thought I would. So these guys are like really my brothers, and it's nice being able to just serve them in a way as a president, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into it. I know there's plenty of guys listening to this who have been in your shoes before, who are probably like smiling and nodding, listening to this, like, yep, been there, done that. It can be a very rewarding thing at times, and it can also be a not so fun role to serve on the team.
At the end of the day, it is super rewarding. I mean, you get to definitely see your efforts play out in real time. But yeah, as I'm sure a lot of ex and old presidents are listening to this, they're smiling and knowing that sometimes it's not the most fun thing ever. You're kind of in the trenches with school and the job, and you know, being a president, it's a whole nother thing. So it's a grind, but it's worth it.
Zach, we talked about going to nationals. Were you guys, jog my memory here, were you guys an auto bid to nationals, or did you guys have to crawl your way through the West regionals?
We had to crawl our way through the West regionals. So we battled that out. Luckily that year it was in Salt Lake, so it was pretty close by. Last year we missed it by a game. We lost in the final game, but we actually was able to host regionals, so that was kind of cool. Didn't turn out in our favor, but yeah, the year we went to nationals when I was here, or since I've been here, we had to go to regionals as well.
We always joke that ACHA M2 is the toughest trophy in all of college sports to win, because you either have to be good enough where you win so many games that you don't have to do regionals, but then those teams, they're basically not playing hockey for a whole month before they go to nationals. And then the opposite side of that is playing your way through regionals, which is basically like a one game playoff, you know, six games in a row. I'd love to hear, like, what was it like that weekend with the regionals being in Salt Lake? Because if I can kind of like remember in my head the final score. Did you guys beat Northern Colorado in one of those games?
We beat Metro.
Okay. All right. Did you guys have to play two or three games that weekend? Do you remember?
We played two. So I think we seeded high enough to where we only had to play two games. Those are the most stressful 48 hours just because it's do or die. So any mistake is crucial. It can come down to one play, and it kind of came down to one play in Metro where I believe, if I remember correctly, they tied it up. We were sent out there, and then I remember just dishing it to Dylan Hale, and he sniped it from the top of the circles like immediately after them scoring. And that's kind of where I was like, okay, like, let's just hold on for the next 5 minutes. And then the last minute was probably the longest longest minute of my life. It just felt like it would never end. They were just peppering us with shots. I think it was a great team experience, but yeah, then going to nationals, it's a little bit different just because some teams don't play for a month and other teams are coming off, you know, regionals, and some of them are, you know, guys are banged up and hurt and trying to just push through the final stages of it. But, you know, nationals is a great experience and it's something I hope we can do again this year.
Pretty crazy part about regionals, when you get that bye, if you seed high enough, you're sitting there watching these teams just go at it the first day. Obviously, we're there watching, you know, looking at the competition, but you get into that first game and you got a team that kind of went through hell that first game trying to squeeze it out, getting in the next round, and they're just fired up. You got to come in and just play good hockey. I was in that last minute that Zig was talking about. Literally, me and my D partner, Trace Farr, were just trying to block anything that was coming to the net, like diving around on one knee, just trying to clear the puck. Like, that was some of the craziest hockey I've ever played. It's do or die. That one game to get to regionals is just some of the most fun, the most stressful hockey of your life. It's crazy.
I mean, I imagine that bus ride back home from Salt Lake after clinching a spot in nationals is pretty fun.
The funny thing is we have to drive ourselves. So we didn't even have a bus ride. So every game in Utah, we drive ourselves. So usually we'll carpool. So I don't know if we had a little gathering after. Maybe we did. I don't remember. But I remember we celebrated for a little bit and then it was back to work that next week.
Yeah, we had a pretty fun locker room, but you know, everyone had to walk out the back of the rink to their cars and drive themselves home. So not the fun bus ride you'd think of, but it really was back to work. It was a fun time. That's an awesome moment right there, having to drive yourself home from a massive win.
Well, Wolves, I got to, again, put your team president hat back on, but is that like cost effective? Because so many of the Utah games are like within driving distance that you don't really need to spend the extra money on a bus.
Yeah, 100%. It's honestly easier to just let guys drive themselves. Even guys that just have family here, pretty well connected, they'll stay down in Ogden or stay in Salt Lake when we have a game down there. So from a cost standpoint and just from overall operations, it's easier to just have guys carpool and head down there. The bus definitely would be nice, but the budget for it really isn't there. So definitely a lot nicer having people drive themselves.
Have there ever been any issues? Like, you pull up to a game and you're like, where's Wolves? Like, where is he? And he's like, you know, stuck at a rest stop or a gas station on the side of the road in Utah.
We've had a couple guys get pulled over on the way down. Salt Lake traffic gets a little crazy. We've had guys like, literally, we've had half the team in front of a crash and half the team behind it. And, you know, half the team's half an hour late. But everyone ends up making it there, able to play. So in that aspect, we've never had anyone miss a game because of it.
We also got some crazy bus stories, though. We do have a lot of bus stories. So we did a weekend trip to Oregon to play in like their like Winter Classic outdoors. I don't think there was any actual buses available. So we had to pretty much use our Utah State shuttle buses and pack like 10 guys into each bus. And it was the craziest thing I've ever been a part of.
I'm going to put my president hat on here. Coach buses were actually outrageous that time. So we decided to go with the school shuttles. That was an officer choice. And everyone has to be driver certified in order to play for the team because we do drive ourselves. So a couple guys took like a weekend course and were able to drive these like 12 person kind of little shuttles. But it was hilarious. It was such a fun time.
I'm plugging that into maps really quickly. Just a rough estimate. Is that like a 9-hour drive?
It was like 12 hours with stopping. And think of like the hotel shuttles you see at a hotel where it's like three seats in the back, two seats, and then one seat in front of each other, like on the window on the other side. I mean, it was packed full of people. And that trip, everybody was sick. It sounded like an ICU in the buses. Like, guys were coughing all over. There was loogies being all over the place. It was the craziest thing I've been a part of. But like, those are memories that will last forever. And it's just something where like, when you go through that, like, teams just bond together in a weird way. It's weird to explain, but it just happens.
Yeah, on our shuttle, one of our goalies was sick and he had a fever and he was convinced the bus was like 100 degrees. He was right by the heater and wouldn't let us turn it on. And we had ice just caking the windows for like 10 hours. The guys are just drawing pictures in it because they're getting bored. But stuff like that, like, it's weird, but it's just the best bonding you could ask for. Having 10 guys just packed on that small bus, just getting along. It's a great time.
I'd feel bad and like, oh, like, I wish you guys could fly to these games, but it sounds like you guys aren't even very good at that. Like, we had some passport issues at nationals.
We had a big passport issue at nationals. We actually had to leave one of my roommates in Boston because he forgot his backpack in the hotel. We get to the airport, it's like, I think it was like 4 a.m. Our flight was at like 6. It was so early. And we get to the airport and everyone's trying to check in and they're like, hey, where's your passport? He goes, I don't even know where it's at. I think it's at the hotel. He ended up Ubering all the way to the hotel. And we got on the flight and just left them.
And what are the chances that the one kid who's still a Canadian citizen forgets his whole passport? Like he was just, we had to let him go. I mean, we had a team ticket. We couldn't change it, but we are running it back. We are actually flying to Arizona next week. Fingers crossed we have no passport issues and we can actually work it out.
Fingers crossed. Hopefully the boys will learn this time. Well, I want to start wrapping up here, but Zach, I'm looking at my note sheet here. There's a couple things we didn't hit. You almost got into a lawsuit over a broken stick. You want to tell that story?
My mom's not proud of it at all, but we were playing in Colorado and it was a 4-1 game. We were on the power play and I like entered the zone wide and did like a tight turn cutback. And when I tight turned, I got drilled from behind. As I'm on the ground trying to stand up, another kid comes up and knees me in the side of the head. And then a full-on brawl starts and I have the kid by the cage. And I knew that if I rip the cage off, it's going to be a game suspension. I wanted to fight him, which would be another game suspension. So the next thing I did was picked up his stick and took it to the bench and snapped it over the boards. Well, I guess the parent of that kid found the live barn footage and called the coaches and said, hey, like, we're going to sue you for this. Like, you guys have to pay for the stick. And we're like, I'm not paying for the stick. So apparently the team ended up paying for it. I mean, I'm not proud of it, but it's better than getting a suspension. So it was like $120 stick. I think we paid him more than that. So
I like that thought process, though. Got the glove on the cage. You're like, if I do this, that's bad. It's like, you know what? Won't be as bad if I just go break his stick over the boards.
Yeah. I mean, what's the difference if I'm skating down the ice and I two-handed in half, you know? So I figured that'd be the better place so I could play the next game. So I feel like it was a 200 IQ play there instead of getting suspended for the next game. But I'm not proud of it, but you know, emotions get the best of you in hockey, and I guess it could have been way worse. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a stick, so hopefully he's got plenty more sticks now.
Wolves, was there anything you wanted to add there? I didn't know if you had your hand up.
I was an officer at the time, and a couple weeks later my coach pulled me aside and he was like, yeah, someone's starting a lawsuit for that stick that Zach broke. And we were like, just pay it. Like, just charge a team, we'll pay for it. That's not worth our time. But yeah, that was funny. That was something I never thought I'd hear of.
I still have the clip on my phone because it's hilarious. It's a story that lasts with all of us vets because we all giggle about it because it sounds so crazy. And like, stuff like that happens in a game all the time. Like, for it to go that far was kind of out of control. But again, another good story that we have.
I wanted to hear that story because I was at one of my brother's high school games in New Hampshire last year. Very different circumstances, but kind of the same situation. Like, there was a loose stick on the ice and a kid skated by and just stomped on it and broke it after the game. Like, the kid's mom was like trying to get in contact with the AD being like, that he should have to buy the stick. He intentionally broke my son's stick. Like, he should have to buy the stick. I don't think anything actually came of it, but it is crazy. The hockey moms, they want their sticks paid for.
They wanted me to walk out of the rink with two players on our team because I guess that's how mad they were. Like, it was so blown out of proportion. It was insane. Like, it was a heated play. It was a scrum going on. It was a full-on line brawl, pretty much. It was a chippy game already. Refs weren't calling anything. So, like, those games were, it was already out of hand. And then for that to happen, you know, with the minute left and I'm getting a knee to the side of my head, it was like, okay, what's going on? Like, I'm going to stand up for myself. And instead of trying to fight the kid, I just decided to do that. I don't know why, but that's just what my mind told me to do.
Well, Wolves, I want to ask you too about your brother, because you come from an ACHA family. We can talk about all the bells and whistles you guys got at Utah State, but he's gone through it in the last year, a former Eastern Michigan ACHA player. We got to pour one out for him here. Are you excited to see him at Cleary this year?
Yeah, old member of the Eagles there. No, it's great to see him play at Cleary. I've heard some funny stories about how they get players to play on that team with some different athletics. As a side note, my brother's going to be on the baseball team and he hasn't played since he was 8 years old. So that's pretty funny. But no, they had some crazy stories over at Eastern. They had a game where they literally could not pay for the refs. They had no money in the team budget. So he paid for it out of pocket and had a couple of his teammates Venmo him the difference. And there are some other stories like breaking Ocho One rules and driving over 3 hours to games that are out of state, like just crazy stuff. But hearing that, like, we have it so good here at Utah State. Like, as stressful as presidency can be, I can proudly say I've never had to pay a ref out of my own pocket. So pour one out for them. They no longer have a team, but everyone who wanted to keep playing there has found a place to play. So looking forward to what those guys do here.
Awesome. That's good news. Again, we were bummed to hear that Eastern wasn't putting together a team this year, but hey, maybe if that's how bad it was getting, maybe it's for the best that they take a couple years off and and regroup. But boys, that's all I have for you guys. I appreciate the time here. I know we're big game against Utah this weekend, then going down to Arizona. Is there anything else we maybe didn't cover that you guys are looking forward to this year?
Looking forward to just, you know, being a big team in Acha too. I think we're definitely a team to watch out for. You know, we're just happy to be here. We're happy to finally be on the pod. I've been listening since, honestly, almost episode one. I went back and listened to all of them a couple of years ago as I was listening to you guys. So just a great opportunity and love what you guys have done for Acha. So it's good. It's fun to be a part of. And as a vet, it's really nice to see the direction that USU is going. You know, leave it better than you found it. So I'm looking forward to where this team ends up in a couple of years and just happy to be here.
Yeah. And as a team here at Utah State, we just want to say thank you to you guys. I mean, you guys do a lot for Acha and bring a lot of attention to ACHA and to teams like us who maybe don't get a lot of recognition just because people don't really know about us. And, you know, a lot of other teams are deserving of that as well. So we just want to thank you guys and all the work you guys put in and keeping that Instagram and the podcast going. It's something special.
Well, hey, you guys have the direct line now. So when people get confused why there's so much Aggie content on the feed, they'll know why.
Perfect. They need to know why. They need to see our games more.
Yeah, we got boots on the ground now with the boys. Well, hey, appreciate you guys coming on, and best of luck this season. Once again, thank you to the boys from Utah State for coming on. Great catching up with them. I mean, Wolves has been a fan of the pod for a long time coming now, so to finally get to connect with him and talk and share some stories, it was really good. And Collins, we talked about like maybe places we would want to go. I mean, Utah State, that's a no-brainer too. Like, they are packing that place every night. It's rowdy. Love, love, love to get out there for a game, especially now with, you know, the Utah Hockey Club. I mean, all the hockey world has their eyes on Utah.
If I can get a trip out to Utah, particularly between the months of December and March, working some skiing there, like, hell yeah, that would be one hell of a weekend.
That's what I'm saying. We got a hell of a lineup of games to watch here. So let's rattle them off here. We got the round one of the Battle of the Bourbon Barrel. University of Louisville will play host to Kentucky. These teams will meet once this weekend, and then they'll meet two more times down the road. It's a best 2-of-3 series. Louisville gets two home games this year, so they'll open things up at the Iceland Sports Complex on Friday night. We also got an M3 versus M1 matchup. Hope College takes on Aquinas at Griff's Ice House. Hope looking to make the jump to ACHA M1. This will be their final season in M3, but maybe they can make some noise against an M1 opponent in Aquinas. We got the Rocky Mountain Showdown this weekend as well. Colorado State taking on Colorado. This one will be hosted at the Adora Pool Ice Center in Fort Collins. We also got Midland taking on Minot State in women's one action Friday night. An NCAA D1 versus ACHA M1 matchup. This one has been circled on the calendar for a long time. Saturday, we see Alaska Fairbanks play host to Grand Canyon University, GCU. The Lopes made some noise last season. They're looking to start the year off against Alaska Fairbanks. They'll have a tough task there. Friday night, we go back to M2, where the University of Washington will take on Washington State in the Apple Cup on ice. This one coming from the Kraken Community Iceplex. Saw these teams battle it out in Seattle the other day on the gridiron. Now we see them taking it to the ice for the Apple Cup here. Friday night, we also got Lindenwood taking on Indiana. I mean, we didn't even talk about this one. Ohio took it to them in M2 action last weekend. 0-2 start for the defending national champions. They are going to play the team that they eliminated in the national tournament last year in Lindenwood. So that is a rivalry going. I mean, 2 years in a row, Indiana basically ended Lindenwood's season. They did so in Marlboro as well, upsetting them in pool play. So that should be a good one. Indiana looking to get in the win column, and Lindenwood looking for some revenge. Women's two action, we have Iowa State taking on University of Iowa. This one coming from Ames. And then Thursday night in women's one action, we have Adrian College playing host to Indiana Tech. It is banner night for the Dogs. NC State takes on South Carolina in a ACHA M2 matchup. They got the best of UNC earlier in the year. Now they're looking to take on NC State. These two teams are going to play an outdoor game later on in the season that we're going to have our eye on in Charlotte. Saturday, we have Niagara AAU D1 taking on the University of Quebec AAU versus Canada in this one. Thursday night, Arizona plays host to San Diego State at the Tucson Convention Center. Friday night, we got M3 action, Grand Valley State versus Central Michigan. Pitt versus Liberty. We talked about this one already. That'll also be a Friday-Saturday series. D1 action, we have an AAU rivalry in Farmingdale State taking on Fairfield. Whew, bear with me, boys. We're almost there. Friday night, University of Minnesota plays host to St. Thomas, and then the University of Iowa plays host to Arkansas. Two M2 games to round out the games to watch. Again, we talked about that Iowa team, Sharp New Jerseys. They got a sweep over Bradley, taking on a red hot Arkansas team on Friday night. And that brings us to our game of the week. Again, there's some big matchups this week, some big name teams that we probably could have gone with for this game of the week. We have got ourselves a rivalry matchup at midnight at Dwyer Arena on the campus of Niagara University. Number 15, Niagara, playing host to number 17, Oswego State University. Oswego State pulled off one of the biggest upsets in ACHA tournament history when they defeated their former national rival, Niagara. Bounced them, one and done. The Purple Eagles got sent home. All that work, Collins, we joked about it ahead of time. All that work to go to nationals and play a team that is, you know, 2 hours from you. Niagara's going to be looking for revenge. Oswego's coming in hot. They got the split with Pitt. Niagara's coming off a weekend where they beat RIT 15-1. So plenty of goal scoring. Let's see if they got any more in the tank here. Herm, I will throw it over to you for the first pick because I know you've been working hard behind the scenes here. Who are you going with this weekend?
Gimme Niagara in overtime. 4-3 win.
Wow. I mean, you got to think the roof gets blown off that place if they win in overtime. The crowd was unbelievable last year when they did this against Buffalo. And I expect a pretty good crowd when they do so against Oswego State here. I should note before we continue, Fitzy was the only one who came out on top last weekend. Colorado defeated Utah 1-0 in the game of the week. Collins, who are you rolling with in this one?
I don't know. I believe I'm 1-1.
The running totals right now are I'm 2-1, Murph is 1-2, Fitzy's 2-1, and Collins is 2-1.
So that helps inform my decision. I'm going to go with Oswego. Going into a barn like that, midnight, raucous crowd, a team that you have a history with, that all just feeds into you as a player. And I think you go in with a mentality saying, hey, we're gonna show them who's boss. I mean, I love the Oswego boys. Love an underdog. I'm betting with my heart here. I'm going with the Lakers.
I really liked Niagara in this one because you got to think it's like a revenge game. Unlike the Liberty effect where the team who plays in front of a big home crowd is at a disadvantage because the opposing team is going to get up for it. Obviously, Oswego is going to get up for it. You know, Niagara doesn't get those types of crowds every night. So I assume those guys are going to get up for it. You see it so many times in sports when somebody's coming off of a big blowout and then they play a much better team, like 15 goals against RIT, like that almost raises the red flag for me. Is Niagara going to get done? I really like the Oswego guys too. I think this is a revenge game for Niagara. I'll go with the Purple Eagles as well here. They've been thinking all offseason about what Oswego did to them. Oswego is going to give them a heck of a game though, coming off that weekend series against Pitt. I see this one being a low scoring affair that goes late into the third and then we get a game winner. I guess this is a good segue into 611 thoughts. And Collins, I salute you for the applauses on my segues earlier. But speaking of Western New York, we got to talk about the University of Buffalo because University of Buffalo has got to figure it out. University of Buffalo ACHA team put out a statement saying, after 8 years with the program, it pains me to say that after the program's 128-year history, there will be no hockey at the university for this fall semester, possibly even the entire 2024-25 season. After our derecognition for failing to have 3 on-campus events last year, a new rule meant to target our programs. We have had a long few months of full conversations with the university to find a way to play. These conversations were met with stubbornness and disinformation from several departments within UB. The university should be ashamed of what they're doing to these young student athletes. This is head coach Morgan Von Heedman, who came on the pod, talked about the relationship that they had with the university. You feel for him. Like, the University of Buffalo should have a hockey team. You look at Sabres fans, how much passion they have. You look at Bills fans, how much passion they have. Like, I know so many guys from Western New York that go to the University at Buffalo, and I just can't believe that they are not putting together a team this year because of what the university did. And Collins, thank you for sending a message here because we got an update that all 3 teams on campus have been de-recognized by the student association here at the University at Buffalo. That means men's ACHA 1, AAU D1, and women's ACHA D2. The AAU D1 team went to the national championship game against South Carolina last year. They lost to a very good South Carolina team, and now they can't have hockey either. It doesn't make any sense. We're going to do everything in our power to make this right, but it is an absolute joke that the University at Buffalo is not letting these kids play hockey this season. I mean it. I'm going to come after Florida Gulf Coast about the logo. I'm going to come after the University at Buffalo about this because that was always a fun place for me to play. We had a rivalry with them at Syracuse. It was a good old barn at the North Town Center. And I just think, like, especially a school in the Northeast where hockey is so popular, for them not to field a single hockey team is a joke. Looking at going in the complete opposite direction, another thing I wanted to point out before we wrapped up the show is you wanted congratulate Roger Williams University. They will be adding NCAA men's and women's hockey programs in the near future. Roger Williams announced that they will field a varsity men's team in 2025-26 and a varsity women's team in 2026-27. The Hawks currently compete in ACHA Division II. Their men's team qualified for the national tournament in 2020, and they're going to do the Keene State model. They're going to continue to field a club hockey team at the ACHA level alongside the varsity men's program. We didn't necessarily need more schools in New England with college hockey to see a school like Roger Williams University, where, you know, they've had such a good ACHA tradition the last couple of years. They've punched a ticket to nationals once before. You know, Kyle Greer is a good friend of mine at Bridgeton Academy, and he was the captain there. Cam Francis, another legend from Roger Williams. I know those guys are so pumped for it, and I think it's going to be great. And I think that'll be a place where guys want to go and play NCAA hockey, and we're super pumped for them. That's all we got. Again, you'll hear from us in 2 weeks. We'll have more to recap and hopefully some updates on some of these top stories here that we kind of close the show with. But thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate all the support. If you ever need anything, don't hesitate to reach out at Hockey House Pod on all social media platforms. And looking forward to another exciting week of ACHA and AAU college hockey action.
See you, boys.